With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments. Get started at chime.com/build.
The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Results may vary. See chime.com for details. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Wow. Oh, what a day. What a day in the nation's capital. Bob Menendez, what a dirtbag. I got to be honest, what a dirtbag. But Senator Robert Menendez, accused of acting as a foreign agent, according to a superseding indictment filed by a federal grand jury in Manhattan today. The indictment says he provided sensitive U.S. government information and took other steps that secretly aided the government of Egypt. And you go, how? Why? Bob, what are you doing? And this is a guy on the government Foreign Affairs Committee. He should, as John Fetterman said, and he is spot on, time to oust him, time to get him out, time to go, Bob. You got work to do keeping yourself out of jail. Now, here's something you're not going to hear. Here's something you're not going to hear. You're not going to hear a single Democrat come to the defense of Bob Menendez. Nobody. Nobody's going to go, oh, Nobody. Unlike the Republicans who have been kind of doing backflips around this this George Santos character, who, you know, I got to tell you, from the beginning, kind of a sleazebag. Now, remember, you know, with the ouster of Kevin McCarthy and now the realization that nothing is going to get done, Republicans are like, okay, now we're going to deal with Santos. The indictments came down, a whole bunch of them. Because now we're finding out a whole bunch of sleazy stuff that we already knew. Understand, Republicans said that they were going to introduce a resolution to oust him, going to get rid of him. Only they didn't. And then Santos went on the attack, like Republicans do masterfully. You got to give him credit. He then turned and threatened all of the Republicans by saying, I do want to remind my dear colleagues who all but one have deep, long, troubling careers in politics that I will have a lot of time on my hands to return the favor in the most expedient fashion mankind has ever seen. Okay, George. Or whatever your name is. Honestly, I don't even know. But here's the thing. You had Republicans at his defense. Not going to hear any Democrats defending Bob Menendez. He should go. And today. Now. That simple. Now, hey, not going to have Steve Scalise to kick around. The David Duke with baggage has dropped out of the House Speaker race. Turns out he started off with a little bit more support, and then the more he opened his mouth, the more he talked, the more things worked out, the less support he got, which, you know, kind of entertaining on a certain level. Got to be quite honest. It has been. I'm not going to say fun. It's been interesting watching some of the responses from Republicans. You look at Republican Mike Rogers, who left a meeting clearly not happy. As my oldest daughter used to say when she was a little kid, he don't happy. Eight. He called the eight Republicans who caused this mess traitors. Called them that four times. Used the word traitors four times. Said they've paralyzed the House by removing McCarthy. And yeah, duh. Because look, Scalise was never going to get to the 217. Not going to happen. And now Rogers is saying, you know, Democrats have to help. No. No, this is where Democrats, you know, sit back, let the Republicans do their thing, which is nothing. Now, as the day went on today, as I said, Scalise somehow lost support. I don't know how that happens. I don't. Which is why you now have moderates in Congress on the Republican side, if there are any. This is the weird thing. They keep saying there are moderate Republicans, and you know, I'm not seeing it. There's really far MAGA, you know, extreme Kook caucus. Scott Perry, you know, Matt Gaetz, that kind of clan over there. And then there's just your run-of-the-mill crazy Republicans who are not, you know, they're not the party of Reagan. They're certainly not the party of Eisenhower. You know, I don't even know that they're not the party of W. Bush. I don't quite know who they, well, they're the Trump party. This is where we are right now. But they're saying, hey, there are center-right Republicans. There's a center-right Republican governance group. And they think that they should empower the temporary speaker so that we can be functional. Because they've already given up on the fact that they themselves, that the Republican Party can do anything to govern. They're admitting this. They're going, we just have to give up. We just have to go. We're going to change the rule and make it so the temporary guy can just, you know, just hang around long enough to finish out the term. And we're going to lose power anyway. So this is what it appears to me. Now, I agree with Andy Ogles, the Republican from Tennessee. Weird, I know. Another extremist. But he said, look, Republicans got to lock themselves in a room. I agree. Got to lock yourselves in a room. In fact, should lock themselves in a room. And cage match style, you know, whoever crawls out gets to be speaker. I think that's it. Now you got Tom Cole, the Republican from Oklahoma, who my friend Bob Ney thinks could be the sane, rational one. If there is a moderate, this is supposedly the guy that could possibly be. He's warning of a potential coalition speaker. You know, someone that all of the Democrats and a handful of Republicans then choose, which Republicans would not like. And he said, look, if people aren't careful, if they aren't very careful, they're going to be open. They're going to open the door for a coalition speaker, which is not something that we should want to happen as Republicans. No, you shouldn't. You should be somewhat functional, but you're not. Because as Representative Troy Neal says, the Republican from Texas, were broken. He walked out of the Republican conference meeting and basically just said, we're a broken conference. And you go, you're a broken conference. Mike Kelly from here in Pennsylvania likened the situation to a football team calling in the play in the huddle, lining up on the line of scrimmage, and then not snapping the ball. Because nobody's listening to the quarterback. Love that. Now, here's the thing. It's all fine, well, and good, you know, that we have no functional House of Representatives. It's all fine, well, and good that the Republicans aren't going to do their jobs and still get paid, oddly enough. But here's the thing. The president is saying that he's going to be needing to request more aid for Israel He's going to be requesting aid for Ukraine. There's also talk of requesting aid for Taiwan, as I understand. And my first thought when I saw this story is, you know, the president's going to make a request for more aid. And I'm going, to who? You know, who's he going to request it from? There's nobody home. There's nobody in the house. There's no functional house. Because all monetary, all purse stuff, all cash stuff, all money stuff has to emanate from the house. Sure, Joe Biden can do their work for them. He can write the bill and go, here, this is what I want. The Senate can go, hey, this is what we can agree to. Here it is. But it still has to start in the house. This is the thing. Now, I look at Republican Dusty Johnson from South Dakota. He says it's really, really hard for this Republican House to govern. We have an incredibly tight margin and, frankly, some members who have a hard time getting to yes on almost anything almost every week. Yeah, it's because you have poor leadership. You have a party that is broken beyond repair, because everyone's searching to be in the spotlight. Everyone wants to be the star. Everyone wants to be, well, on Fox News. They want to do the podcast circuits. They want the attention. There used to be a word for that, but I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that on terrestrial radio. It starts with a W and ends in or. But, you know, this is who these people are. Their attention, you know. Now, here's the weird thing. If you remember, prior to Republicans taking power, Nancy Pelosi had a smaller margin. And amazingly, we didn't shut down the government. Amazingly, we didn't, you know, oust the speaker. Amazingly, we didn't do a lot of the craziness that we're seeing out of Republican-led government. In fact, we got stuff done, some really great stuff. Some historic stuff, infrastructure bills. We've got investments in the future. We got a CHIP Act. We got stuff done. And this is the difference between people who believe in government, believe in doing their job, coming to doing an honest day's work, a fair day's work for a fair day's pay, and people who are just primping and preening for the cameras. And I think, again, Senator John Fetterman is absolutely correct. The U.S. is not sending their best and brightest to Congress. He was on with Colbert and said, sometimes you literally just can't believe these people are making the decisions that are determining the government here. It's actually scary. And I agree. Now, here's the thing. You know, Representative Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin, Republican, said it does seem, as we've opened the Pandora's box of unrestrained ambition, people feel no loyalty to this institution. You go, really? I would argue your entire party. Again, and I hate saying this because I wish it weren't true, because we need a functional Republican Party, because we need functional people to do things that need to be done. But I go back to January 6th. I go back to the Trump administration. These are people who don't believe in institution. They don't believe in our government. They don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in this country. They believe in their narrow-minded ideology and their blind ideology of what they think this country should be, but certainly not what it is. But I got lots to get to and lots to talk about. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, this has caught the attention of some. You know, hey, and it's good. It's good because we do need functional government. And here to share some thoughts, you know, maybe got an idea. Let's get Steve in Chicago on line one and get some thoughts here. Steve, what's on your mind, brother?
Well, I wanted to say that I couldn't agree with you more with regard to the need for a functional Republican Party. I know that there are some people on the left, and I've spoken to a great many of them over the years, who would, you know, given the choice, they would eradicate the Republican Party tomorrow. The problem being that would leave a large hole in the body politic, because there are a large number of people in this country who actually adhere to many of the principles which the traditional Republican Party represents. And there are some that actually adhere to some of the crazy nonsense that the Republican Party has come to represent. So the idea of simply removing them entirely from the landscape, and it would be just a country run by Democrats, that's a recipe for civil war and the destruction of our democracy. So yes, they need to exist. But having said that, it is not the responsibility of Democrats to help you create a functional party. And this idea that somehow the Democrats are going to bail out somebody so that they can be the Republican speaker, I mean, is ludicrous. I mean, McCarthy went on the air before he was ousted to basically blame Democrats for the ills of this country and what he was facing, rather than, you know, standing up there and saying, you know what, there are some sane Republicans, we want to govern, we know that there are some sane Democrats, they want to govern, let's sit down, let's talk, let's have a meeting. He might have been able to remain speaker. Who knows? But no, you know, as you have pointed out, there was a time in this country when it was my party came before me and the country comes before everything else. Today, it's exactly the opposite. What happens to the country, not my problem. What happens to the party, again, not my problem. It's my career and my agenda, and because we've gerrymandered so many of these districts into places where only the most extreme candidates can win, you basically have any number of Republicans who know better. They are adult enough to understand better, but they don't dare stand up and say the right thing because they're afraid they're going to be primaried by some wacko who's further to the right than they are. And I don't know what the answer is other than to say, you know, somebody's got to show some intestinal fortitude and character in that party and stand up and say, you know what, it may cost me my career in this party. And it may take 10 years, long after I'm gone, for us to regain some semblance of normalcy and be a functional party. But, you know, I'm willing to pay that price because my country comes before anything else. But today, no. It's a bunch of people who are, again, I can't say anything that's going to threaten my position, because God forbid that I should lose the next election. Because, you know, as a former congressman, that means I'm going to be homeless on the streets as if there's no other option for me. I mean, come on.
No, you're right. And we got to get money out of politics. I mean, every congressman I've ever talked to, every person who's ever left office said, you know, the number one thing you got to do is you got to get money out of this game because people are just too beholden to getting the attention, fill the coffers so that they can run for the next election. It's not about doing the work today. So that's a huge part of it as well, Steve.
Yeah, and you know, congressmen want to be senators. Senators want to be presidents. I mean, and the fact is that over the past few decades, we have not managed to hold the line even. You know, we have eroded that demarcation between money and politics, such that, you know, the Supreme Court has basically said, well, hey, you know, it's speech. Money equates to speech. So, you know, you can buy democracy in this country.
Yeah.
You know, so if you know, a handful of billionaires want to pass the XYZ policy, and for people who don't know it, this is possibly the greatest investment that you could make if you want any sort of public policy. Senators and congressmen are remarkably cheap to buy in America.
Yes, they are.
For what you get. I mean, you know, you can, if you're in the defense industry, if you're in healthcare, you can go down a long line of public policy sectors, and you say, okay, how much does it cost to get my guys elected to Congress, you know, to get a dozen congressmen elected, to get five, six senators in key positions elected.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, versus the hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars that they can then sure comes to my sector, or monies that I don't pay in to regulate my sector, or I don't pay in taxes.
No, you were spot on right, Steve. I appreciate the thoughts. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Let's go to Jack in Wisconsin on line two. Jack, how are we doing today?
Well, pretty good considering the craziness that's going on. Your previous caller, I think Steve was his name, I think he had it right. Ever since Reagan said the government's not the answer, the government's the problem, that's paraphrased. That's not a direct quote, I think. But in any case, ever since then, it has been the policy of the Republican Party to break the government, to show that the government doesn't work, and then blame the Democrats for it. That's the first thing I want to say. Second thing I want to say is, in terms of the crazy gerrymandering, we're trying to do something about that in Wisconsin, by the way. Our gerrymandered legislature, from 46% of the vote, is about 65% Republican. But that's going to go before the state Supreme Court, and I think it has a very good chance of being changed, hopefully before the next election. And finally, I have a wonderful quote here from Jamie Raskin from an NPR interview, I think in January of 2021. And he said, "I wish the Democratic Party wasn't the only democracy party in America, but it is." And that really boils down to what the situation has become.
Absolutely spot on, Jack. Right on. And look, in Wisconsin, by all means, please take back your districts, take back your state to somewhere near the Seine line. I've been begging for that since 2011, but I appreciate the thoughts.
We have been working on that since 2011, too.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. Call again. Let's go to Alice on line three. Alice, how are we doing? And what's on your mind?
I'm insane. What I wanted to say was, this nonsense going on in the House is just crazy. And I don't even know why Steve Scalise was trying to get in there, because, you know, I was reading, and he has multiple myeloma. And I, you know, that's a very nasty cancer. And I know that because my dad had that and passed away from it. So, by the way, wanting to show a little bit of niceness, I sent him a message on Facebook and told him that I was sorry to hear that he had multiple myeloma, and that I hope that he went into full remission.
Yeah.
But I hope that these people hurry up and get their stuff together, because the world's burning and they're twiddling their thumbs. Have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I wish him well. I do. Look, he's got a blood cancer, and you know, he's had it rough. I mean, he got shot not too long ago. He's got this blood cancer. Health-wise, I wish him well, a long, healthy life, all that stuff. I just don't want him as a speaker. I just don't want him anywhere near power or leadership or any of that, because the guy is terrible. I mean, and we don't need that kind of extremism. Now, the question then becomes, who is going to be speaker? Who wants to be speaker? This is one of those weird things where you go, the guy who wants to be speaker is the guy you don't want. Because that's the person who's doing it probably for all of the wrong reasons. I mean, I look at Jim Jordan, I look at Scalise, the people who threw their name in. You know, I don't think the best interest of the country was anywhere near their thought process. It was about power. It was about control. It was about, oh, I'm going to be able to wield the gavel. But here we are. And again, I go back to, we need a functional government. And, you know, as people have already said, look, this goes back to Reagan. This goes back to, you know, government's the problem. And we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs to any time, you know, we talk about our government, it's always got to be an attack line. It's always the butt of an attack. Instead of saying, look, you know, we should be electing people who want to be functional representatives who are going to solve problems, who have expertise, not someone who just was able to raise enough money from billionaires or was able to win a popularity contest, but people who actually know something, want to do something, have a record of doing things to help we the people. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? Isn't that what it was meant to be? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So lots of fun and craziness. And look, you know, I'm just watching this speaker thing. And I come back to who in their right mind in this moment would want to be Speaker of the House? If you're a Republican, you know, why would you put yourself into this mess? I have no idea. But here to help us work through some of the machinations of insanity, some of the cabal of crazy, and maybe where this is going to end up. Maybe Democrats take the House. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe Republicans finally wake up to the reality that they just don't want to govern. They don't want to be in charge. They don't want to lead. They like being the bomb-throwing minority party. Maybe this is where we end up. And, you know, I'm okay with that. And here to share some thoughts, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story. RawStory.com if you want to take a look at the incredible reporting and storytelling she does there. We'll get links out on social media. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello. Hello. How are you this evening?
I am well. So what are you making of this? What do you make of the latest bits of insanity? Scalise is out. You're not going to have Steve to kick around. You're not going to have David Duke without the baggage to kick around.
Oh, what a bummer. So he could only get to, I think it was 119 votes, maybe. What I think is hilarious is that he went into the caucus today saying, oh, yeah, I've got 150 votes. Yeah. And which is what they're sort of benchmark was going into this, and if you could get to 150, they were like, all right, that'll be the point at which we all say, okay, we'll put our support behind him. So he goes in there, they have this vote, he says that he can get to 150, and then all of the sudden it turns out he can't. Like, maybe he was lying the whole time. Oh my gosh, I know. Everybody's shocked at a Republican who is lying.
Yeah. Shocked, I tell you.
Shocked. But in the meantime, he got Jim Jordan to drop out and endorse him, which I think is hilarious. But still, nobody's behind Scalise. And so I think there were just so many people that were hardline know that he was never going to win. And I don't know. I think you're right. Nobody in their right mind would ever want a job like that with the Republican Party the way that they are. And I think the hilarious thing is there are so many Republicans that are now, I mean, they've been attacking Democrats this whole time, being like, it's your fault.
It's what they do. Yeah, we broke the lamp, but it's your fault for putting it on the table.
Right. Like, you know, this is all your fault because you didn't do anything to stop us, or, you know, it's the quitting
yourself. You didn't
stop
us. You didn't protect us from ourselves.
And I feel like at this point with the Republicans that are saying, well, you know, we need Democrats to come in and save us, it is essentially Republicans admitting, hey, guess what? We can't govern. You know, we shouldn't be in charge of Congress, essentially is what they're saying. Or we need Democrats to make us be in charge of Congress. One of the Republicans, Representative Joyce, had the guts to suggest, what's his name, the interim guy, the gavel,
McHenry.
Yeah, McHenry, should, that Democrats should allow him to be speaker for like 30 days or something like that. And I was like, that dude threw out Nancy Pelosi from her office while she was at a funeral.
Yep.
Like, he told her she had 24 hours to get out. while she was at a funeral. Like, Democrats don't forget stuff like that. And I feel like if you maybe want something from them, you should not be burning those bridges.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those things where that was the first club out of the bag. That was the first choice. That was your first official act. Now, look, Democrats have done that kind of stuff too, but they've done other things that were at least functional. This, again, I come back to, this is a message to the American people that we can't police ourselves. We can't govern ourselves. Why would you want us to govern for anyone else? We shouldn't be in charge of the picnic basket on the way to the park, because you're going to go hungry. And this is where we are, because here's the sad reality. The globe is in crisis. The president is asking for more money, aid to give to Israel, to Ukraine, possibly to Taiwan. Who's he going to ask? Where's the money coming from? Because there's no functional house.
And we're about 30 days away from another shutdown.
Potential shutdown.
So, right? So I mean, I really think I go back to, remember the Problem Solvers Caucus? There's like 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats, and they never actually do anything, and they never really solve any problems. But you're kind of like, well, you got 10 Republicans. If you can get 5 of those to say, we're going in on Hakeem Jeffries if you give us some concessions, then I feel like that's the way that they're going to have to do it. And they can have like a power sharing government with the Problem Solvers Caucus and Democrats. And just that's how it's going to be. That's the only way I see it actually working and functioning. But I don't know if those 10 Republicans would really run the risk of losing their seats in the next election.
Yeah, and that's never going to happen. I'm going to say it's never going to happen for a couple of reasons. One, as you've pointed out, anyone who crosses the aisle and works with Democrats in this moment going to immediately be primaried and they're going to immediately lose their seats. And then there's the other part of nothing's going to get done anyway. So the idea that you're going to give Democrats the gavel and allow them to then shut down impeachments and shut down inquiries and shut down all of the nonsense that Jim Jordan and the Kook Squad want to bring on, it's just not going to happen. Because that's all they've got to take to the American people of, yeah, we're bad, but look how much worse they are. That's all they've got. That's it.
It is, and I think the worst part of this situation is that if that has been what, you know, is going on for the last year, and they acknowledge that they can't govern and they need Democrats to come in and do it, then essentially Democrats, you know, pass larger funding for Ukraine, for Israel, they pass the budget, they re-auth the farm bill, they make sure Pentagon is fully funded, like all of these really big things. You know, Democrats are just like checking off the list, proving again, you know, they're the do nothing Congress and we actually get things done for you.
Yeah, but you would still need Republicans across the aisle to vote on that.
You'd
stuff.
Still need those 5.
Yeah, you still need them. And I don't know that you get them on board for all that stuff. I think, you know, maybe just to put the close the door on crazy and make us at least appear to be functional. Maybe you could get them to come around, possibly. But on all the other stuff, you would really then be the end of their careers.
I know. And I started thinking, well, maybe they could make a deal with Democrats where Democrats are like, okay, we'll let you go, you know, this election. But you're right. It's the primary where they're going to get killed. So it's just like, what do you do? Because Republicans really are just so damaged as a party that they can't do anything. And, you know, on the Senate side, we've talked about McConnell before, where it's just like the old McConnell, you know, this wouldn't be happening. And that's why I really feel like something is going on with McConnell where he's really not all there, because it just seems like everything in the Republican Party has fallen apart.
Yep. Well, what's that old saying? The fish rots from the head, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's something like the fish rots from the head down or something like that. And look, you go Trump down, all dysfunction, all chaos merchants, all people who are destroyers, nobody who's interested in a functional government. No one's interested in a government that's going to help people. No one's interested in a government that actually produces results. It's honestly, the only thing that they can run on is government's bad. And if they actually tried to do anything, it would hurt them with their base.
It would. And I think for those Republicans who are, you know, trying to run against the hard right, I don't know how they describe it to their people other than, hey, I'm funding your parks, I'm funding your roads, I'm bringing stuff back to the state. Because I think that's, Democrats would have to give them a whole heck of a lot of pork to come on board for something like this.
And look, I have never been against that.
Right?
You know,
I am very pro pork. Bring the bacon.
I know the T-Twits ran on, no, we can't do this. No, that's how things get done. That's how we get bridges. That's how we get schools. That's how we get hospitals and libraries and museums and roads. And that's how the pothole out in front of my house gets fixed. Because you've got a congressman who wants my vote.
Yep, exactly. And I feel like that for a long time was sort of cut off where we weren't doing that. And now, you know, we've reinstated it, I think, because it's important that, you know, we'd be able to negotiate.
I'm still hoping. Are you with me here? I'm still hoping they pulled Donald Trump out of the bullpen, bring him in, make him speaker.
Oh, my God. That would be so good. I know that it wouldn't be good,
but it would be
the end of him in the most beautiful way. It would be it would destroy the Republican Party, especially in Congress. And honestly, like looking at Jim Jordan, I kind of don't see much of a difference there, because the biggest problem or the biggest asset I think Scalise had that Republicans were saying is that he can raise a lot of money and he can get them reasonably elected, despite the fact that he claimed to be David Duke without the baggage. Jim Jordan can't get people elected. He can't raise money. He's got nothing. Donald Trump won't raise money because he wants the money. And at the same time, the dude's too busy with his lawsuits and, you know, campaigning for president. So the fact that he's going to try and be speaker at the same time, it's just like, oh, please, let me walk you off the cliff.
No, but here's the thing. This is the question that I come back to. Do we want 4 years of this with a Trump White House? I mean, it's easy to forget what the 4 years of the Trump administration were, the chaos, the constant turmoil, the constant, and, you know, the outrage candy daily, the, you know, just the constant, you know, push and pull. I mean, it's been relatively, with Biden, it's been just a guy showing up doing his job. You know,
getting
stuff done. Things are somewhat functional. You're not worried about, you know, the end of democracy just yet. I got to tell you, with 2024 coming around the corner, I think people need a shock and a wake-up call of what Trump is going to return for us, only on steroids, because he's already said retribution. That's job one.
And I think the scariest thing about another Trump administration is that before we had a lot of people who were, you know, the Mark Milleys and the Espers and people who were taking their oath of office seriously and saying, I will preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Trump literally said, I never took an oath to the Constitution.
Not to support it. No, I don't support the Constitution.
I never said that I would support the Constitution.
And he didn't. In his defense, he didn't. Protect.
He just said.
And defend.
I will.
Protect and defend. Never said support. It's not in the wording, but seriously, are you going to make that word? Are you going to make that argument? That's what I would argue. That's worse than Bill Clinton, and you know, the word is.
That is way worse than the word is. You know, I don't know how he turns that into, you know, the perfect speech. Because
it's the perfect argument.
And I will say too, like, I don't know if you've noticed lately, but I mean, he's always sort of been crazy, but lately it seems like he's been saying some really weird
lately.
I know. I mean, lately? Like, so it started for me. It started last weekend whenever he said that he was endorsed by Hannibal Lecter and went off on this whole tangent about, you know,
that's a coveted endorsement.
Right. This is a long time ago. And, you know, he said that he liked Trump. And so I like him and yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, do you know who that is? I mean, first of all, he's not real.
He's going to have a friend for dinner.
Right. Second of all, he's going to eat your face off. Third. I mean, I kind of went down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out who he was talking about because I was like, okay, Anthony Hopkins kind of has washed his hands of politics, but he really doesn't like Trump. Then I thought about the dude who played Hannibal in the TV series. He really, really hates Trump. And so at that point, you're just like, well, who was he talking about? And then you're like, well, who kind of looks like him? That dude from Succession? No, he really hates Trump. And I'm like, I mean, my roommate and I were just like, I can't figure out who the heck he was talking about.
He's talking about the guy who was in the play off Broadway. One of the off Broadway productions, you know, way off Broadway, like Des Moines.
Like Des Moines. Right? I mean, I thought maybe he mixed up Hopkins with John Voight. I mean, that's the only thing I could come up with that was logical. Anyway, so that happened. Then he does this whole Hezbollah thing, which is, you know, saying that they were smart.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been a lot of stuff. And I mean, it's more than usual is the thing. Like, it's crazier than usual. And I watch this guy all the time.
Yeah, but here, let me ask you this, because, you know, Trump's always taken the opposite position of the mainstream. So it's almost a reflex. Could it be that just, hey, if you're here, I got to be here. A lot of my red hat friends, if I say something, they've got to take the opposite position, no matter what it is. You know, water is wet. No. Water's not wet. You get wet from water. Yeah, okay, whatever. But could it be that? Or is he just losing this? Is he just going senile?
So I do see a difference between those two things. Whenever it comes to him attacking Netanyahu and starting to, you know, accuse Netanyahu of trying to take credit for something or whatever his rant was and being against the Israeli government. I think that is coming from Biden's 40-year relationship with Netanyahu and the fact that the two of them have very publicly talked about their relationship and Biden's support of Israel and all of those things. And so Trump is like, well, now I have to go because Netanyahu is not my guy anymore. He doesn't like me anymore. He's supporting Joe Biden by being nice to him or something. So that is one thing. Going off about Hannibal Lecter, I just am like, that is the dividing line between me, where he goes off on these weird tangents about policy or whatever. And at least you can sort of, I know this is crazy, you can follow where his brain is bouncing around to. But that one and a couple of the other ones for the last couple of weeks, I've just been like, what?
Yeah, like if you
really?
Like if he's stuck in the ocean, he's got a choice of being eaten by sharks or electrocuted.
Yeah.
You know, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the whole like, I'm going to choose electrocution every time after he just went off on a whole tangent about how he hates battery powered vehicles. And you're just like, but all vehicles have batteries. I mean, there was that. There was, some of it is he tries to make jokes and he doesn't know how. But I mean, I've been writing about Omarosa lately because she's in this stupid villains reality. It's a reality show about a reality show, which is like, oh, come on. How did Andy Cohen not come up with that? But it reminded me of an interview that she did, I want to say maybe in 2020 or 2021, where she said that it was 21, because she said, if Trump is going to run again, then he needs to come clean to the public about his health. And she didn't say anything else. There was no follow-up done by the reporter because it was like the Today Show or something.
Right.
And no one has really answered that question in the last 2 years. And I'm starting to wonder now, you know, he has been accusing Biden of being sleepy and cognitively impaired. And usually when he's pointing fingers, it's because it's him.
Right.
And so now I'm like, oh crap, it really is him. Like, something is seriously going on here. And maybe it is.
Yeah, maybe it is. Either way, very scary guy. Now, do you agree with George Conway, who said that Democrats need to go on the attack? They need to do some psychological warfare because they need to make what he's saying is the Democrats need to make Trump crazy because there are things that he knows he's not smart. He knows he's not that rich. He knows he's not that good. He says, so if you go and you attack him on the things he knows deep down that he's not, it's going to make him crazy. He's not that far from his bursting point. Do you agree with that?
I think it's brilliant and it's perfect. It's not something the Democratic Party does because I don't feel like they have the ad people. Well, either the ad people smart enough to do it or clever enough to do it or willing to do it. But if you've got people like the Lincoln Project willing to do it, and we can get some more super PACs who are smart enough to do these things, then I think it absolutely should be done. And it's easy. I mean, Lincoln Project does it all the time, and it's so affordable because you can just do an ad buy, you know, in that small town of Bedminster on Fox, or one, you know, in Palm Beach on Fox. And it's so easy to just mess with his head. And they do it, you know, Lincoln Project does it all the time. And I think they should just turn it up a notch.
No, but again, these are former Republicans. They're Republicans. They're going to go back to whatever, you know, these aren't, they're not Democrats. They're not coming over with open arms. That's not happening.
Democrats don't play dirty. And been their downfall.
It goes back to that stupid comment, when they go low, we go high. And I remember the day that dumbest statement ever spoken was thrown out there. When they go low, we go high. And I go, no. When they go low, you smash their face into the dirt so they don't do it again. None of you people ever play football. When someone goes for your knees, you put your knees in the back of their neck and drive them right into the dirt. They don't do it again.
So for me in the campaign world, what I've always said is, as the candidate and as the main campaign, you always operate that way. And you let the super PAC and the third party people do that level of attack because you don't want it under your name. The problem is that Democrats have been so unwilling to use soft money in that way. And I don't know if it's because they're coming at it from a moral high ground of, oh, well, we shouldn't have super PACs or we shouldn't be fighting like that. It's stopping at imaginary stop signs, essentially.
No, as I've always said, you know, in a street fight, Democrats will often offer to hold your coat. And they won't ball up their digits and get in there and swing away. And this is why, again, I think the reason they've lost the working, the white working class is because they aren't willing to go in and engage in some, you know, some fisticuffs and mix it up a little bit. Because, look, they've got the right policies. They've got the right arguments. They just don't go out there and throw enough punches. And look, I think Gavin Newsom, I don't know what he's doing lately. Some of the things that he's been vetoing, very curious to me. But you know, I think he's one of those guys who is willing to go out there and mix it up a little bit.
I do too. And it's been refreshing. But again, you know, California is the kind of universe where they have Democrats that are fighting amongst themselves a lot. And so, you know, Republicans are so marginalized in that state in a lot of districts that I kind of feel like it's easy for somebody like Gavin Newsom to attack Republicans. And for somebody who's like, you know, a moderate in the middle of, you know, Omaha trying to get elected as a Democrat, it's a lot harder to play that game.
I still come back to you got to get out there and you got to throw the punch.
Yeah. Somebody should give us lots of money so that we can do ads attacking us, attacking Trump and playing the psychology game on him and just completely messing with his head.
There you go. Finally, I got to get your thoughts on you got Josh Hawley who said, hey, now's a good time to gut the funding to Ukraine so we can give to Israel. Marjorie Three Names. I guess she's involved in this, too.
Yeah, it's so interesting. All of these people, I think it was Marjorie had a photo that she took with Code Pink or something last week and has become this like, oh, I'm anti-war. I don't believe in war. Everybody's like, oh, we need to pull out of Ukraine because we shouldn't be for war. And now everybody's like, we're going to war with Israel, for Israel. We're going to war. We're going to war. So that's been interesting to watch, all of these people who suddenly are in favor of war. And now they're trying to make the excuse, well, we can't be having two wars at the same time. And I'm like, really? Didn't we just finish spending 10 years fighting two wars at the same time, one of which was a complete fraud? Because, I mean, we seem to do that okay, and you guys were fine with it. And at least we're not putting troops on the ground this time. Yet, yep. I suppose.
Let the fun begin. Oh, I forgot. I forgot to ask about Trump and the Forbes 400.
Bless his heart. Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
There are some who argue he should have never been on it in the first place, but you know,
yeah, the biographers who did the research, they know for sure he shouldn't have been on it years.
Sarah, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, everybody. Have a good day tomorrow.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Remember, check out her work over at Raw Story, rawstory.com. The website, if you want to take a look at the fabulous reporting that she does. Gonna take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about the last couple of days, some new reporting out, and nothing new. I mean, nothing surprising, but Reuters has got a new story out saying inequality is getting worse. It's gotten worse again. Thanks, pandemic. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. But hey, the folks at the very bottom, because of the pandemic, because of all the labor organizing, they're doing a little bit better. They're doing a little bit better, but our top 1% still taking a larger share of the national wealth. As some believe it should be. Because we need to have a billionaire class, a benevolent billionaire class, who will eventually, fill their pockets and it'll trickle down. You've heard the story. And then we get to fight over what trickles out. I haven't found that trickle yet, but maybe I'm still hopeful, but here to share some thoughts on this latest reporting and maybe share some thoughts on how we actually create an economy that works for all. I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. It's great to be in your show.
So what do you make of these latest numbers? You've got, the pandemic brought us, gilded age inequality. Our billionaire class, put a couple of trillion dollars extra wealth into their coffers at the expense of working people. Are we surprised, given the setup that we have, that this is our reality?
No, I'm not surprised, because the rich have been getting richer, and everyone else has been just having trouble getting by. And I think it's permanently been that way almost every year. And we've been working on this, I've been working on this for 10 years now, just Patriotic Millionaires, but people have been working on this for millennia and hundreds of years. And I think we've got this class of people who are sort of running the country, the politicians and business leaders, and they just feel that, well, workers are supposed to be poor. They're supposed to be dependent on their employers, who are supposed to be, I don't know, benevolent father figures or dictators or something. And it just makes me sick to think about that. I mean, I think people really believe that.
Yeah. No, I think we've been trained to think this way. I go back to the 90s and George Carlin, who I got to tell you, I miss George Carlin. especially in these moments, we could use someone like him. But he said back, you know, in the 90s, he said, look, you know, the rich have all the money. They pay none of the taxes. The middle class does all the work, pays all of the taxes. And the poor, they're there to scare the hell out of the middle class. So they keep showing up to those jobs and putting up with all of the guff that they get from the rich. And it's a very succinct comment. It's a very true comment if you look around.
Yes. I mean, I think that's what Trump was saying last week when he went to Michigan to speak, is that he was telling the workers, A, you should, the people actually work for a living, A, you should be worried about people with different color skin who can take your jobs, and B, you should be worried about your union leaders being too demanding and not having enough, not thinking about the plight of the poor company owners. And it's just absurd. This trickle-down thing, it's just not right.
You know, it's interesting you hit on the Trump comments, especially that part about you know, not getting too much out of the employer and caring about them. Because Trump was supposed to be the guy who was going to revive those jobs that supported a family. He was supposed to bring back the fabulous 50s and 60s. He was supposed to bring back all of those good union manufacturing jobs that supported a family on one income and did it very well, by the way. He was supposed to be that guy, and to have him say those things that did not get reported on very well is kind of remarkable.
It's just, I think he really believes it. You know, when he was running his real estate companies, he really believed that all of the workers sort of were like his, like, you know, I don't know, nephews or something that depended on him for their livelihood, the same way his children do. You know, this trickle-down thing, it just doesn't work. You know, look up the tapes when I was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart just at the end of his reign. We were demonstrated that money doesn't trickle down. It trickles up.
Right.
Investors like me get rich every time people like you make your car payments and make your mortgage payments and make your iPhone payments and your phone bills and your electric bills. That money just in little bits from everybody's checks trickles up into the accounts of the people that own stock in all of those companies. And that's how people like me make money without having to work. Money doesn't trickle down. Money trickles up. I think that's what the American people have to understand.
No, I had a very wealthy uncle who used to, he wanted to educate me on wealth. And you know, he said, look, we could give all those poor people money. We could give all those poor people all the money. And eventually I would get it all. And I would go, yeah, I don't disagree with you. So how about we give people the ability to put food on their table, a roof over their head, and maybe, you know, the old ideal of bread, yes, but roses too. And yes, you'll get the money back. But in the process, we'll create decent lives for people. He didn't like that idea.
That's our whole point about raising wages. We've been advocating for higher minimum wage for years. Not because I'm altruistic and not because I think, oh my God, it's the poor people need this and that. I mean, it's true. It's very expensive and very hard to be poor. But really, we investors and business people need people have enough money to pay for stuff and buy stuff. You know, I don't know if it's completely true about what Henry Ford said about needing to pay the workers so they have enough money to buy cars, but there's truth to that. We need to have workers making enough money to buy cars, or we won't be able to sell cars because there aren't enough rich people to buy very many.
No, you're absolutely right. And this is where, you know, my uncle was right. You know, look, he will, you know, the very wealthy, you and your Wall Street friends and the very wealthy, they are going to get all the money. We've seen that. We've seen it play out. But it would be nice if it went through us first.
Yes. It makes sense that way, but there's this whole mentality that, oh, workers are supposed to be like
in their place.
In their place, exactly.
Well, did you see the clip of the Australian CEO? I think his name was Tim Gurney. We played his clip here, you know, several times, where he said, look, we need like 40% higher unemployment. We need pain in the economy. We need those working people to know that they need us more than we need them. They need to know their place. Now, again, he took a little heat for it. He did, some bit of a retraction afterwards. But the fact that it came out of his mouth so easily led me to go, look, this is what these folks say to each other when we're not around.
It's true. I was at a meeting with an official of the Biden administration, and they were going over their charts and things. They came up with something about the labor force participation is going up, meaning more people are looking for jobs, which is not a bad thing.
No.
And saying, oh, because there's more people joining the labor force, that will help keep wages down and prevent inflation. And I just stood up and said, are you really saying that? Is that really what you believe? And fortunately, they said, well, you're channeling what the same thing the president Biden said when he saw this. So, I mean, maybe the president is with us, but it's just ridiculous that people think that way. I remember a meeting I had with somebody about the Paycheck Protection Program. I said, hey, we need to, send money to all these workers who lost their jobs because of the pandemic. This was early in the pandemic time.
Right.
I said, well, no, we need to send money to the employers because we need to maintain the connection of the employers and the workers. I'm like, really? That's our goal, is to make the workers have to be connected with their employers even after they've been laid off? That's the goal of your plan? And it just makes me sad to think that actually is what they meant. And
Both parties are the party of business. Some just, the Democratic Party has been the party of business as well, but just not to the extreme that Republicans have been. And you're going to have that kind of Larry Summers mentality on the Democratic side sometimes, which is why we need folks like you to be pushing both sides to be more worker friendly, more citizen friendly.
We're working on it. We really are. We've got some Democrats who think our way, maybe not enough, and very few Republicans.
See, but I think this is where you're going to the voters like you are doing with your Great Economy Project is so important, where it's not about red hat or blue hat. And I say this all the time. It's not red hat, blue hat. It's hard hat. We've got a lot of work to do in this country, and it's no party's going to save us. We've got to save ourselves. But being educated on the issues that are important, the kitchen table stuff, of which you guys are doing very well, that's where we should be spending a lot of time, effort, and energy. And moving policy in that world to help create that prosperous working class that my grandparents' generation fought, bled, and died for.
We are getting voters together, or people together, and telling them about issues like how the tax policies work, why it is that I have a lower tax rate than anyone who works for a living, how it is that large company CEOs make so much more money than workers do, how it is that people sort of pretend to be philanthropists and stick their money aside and never actually use it for philanthropy. And, five or six lessons, and the people are getting organized, and they're calling their representatives, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, and asking them about these policies. Why aren't you for higher minimum wages? Why aren't you for taxing the rich? We've done that in North Carolina. We've gone to Wisconsin. And now we're going to Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania next.
I look forward to that. You listen to The Rick Smith Show with Morris Pearl. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. Check out the website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can do that. In talking about taxes, I don't know if you saw this story about Microsoft, but the IRS is evidently going after Microsoft for some, $28 billion in back taxes. Any thoughts on going after corporate America to get them to fess up some of the stuff that they hoarded before the Jobs Act?
Well, they should. I mean, I don't know the specifics of Microsoft. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not commenting on their exact technical details. But basically, that's what they had in mind when they increased the budget of the IRS. That, and that the Republicans were all complaining about, oh, Biden wants to send, guys in black suits to every small business in America. No, they were hiring lawyers to figure out what these big companies are doing and make them pay what they're supposed to be paying anyway. And of course, they want to cut the budget for that. That's how they want to save money.
Yeah.
Just makes me sick.
We got a lot of work to do, Morris, but I appreciate you taking a little time for us, sharing your expertise and your thoughts. Keep up the amazing work, and I look forward to having you back again real soon.
Great to be in your show. See you next week.
Thanks so much, our good friend Morris Pearl. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it looks like not such great news for the SAG-AFTRA folks. They put out a Twitter press release saying that it's with profound disappointment that we report that the industry CEOs have walked away from the bargaining table after refusing to counter our latest offer. We have negotiated with them in good faith, despite the fact that last week they presented an offer that was shockingly worth less than they proposed before the strike began. They go on to say these companies refuse to protect performers from being replaced by AI. They refuse to increase your wages to keep up with inflation. And they refuse to share a tiny portion of the immense revenue your work generates for them. We have made big, meaningful counteroffers on our end, including completely transforming our revenue sharing proposal, which would cost the companies less than 57 cents per subscriber. They have rejected our proposals and refused to counter. Instead, they used bullying tactics. Just tonight, they intentionally misrepresented to the press the cost of the above proposal, overstating it by 60%. They have done the same with AI, claiming to protect performers' consent, but continuing to demand consent on the first day of employment for the use of a performer's digital replica for an entire cinematic universe or any franchise project. They go on to say the companies are using the same failed strategies they tried to inflict on the Writers Guild, putting out misleading information in an attempt to fool our members into abandoning our solidarity and putting pressure on our negotiators. But like the writers, our members are smarter than that, and we will not be fooled. And look, you know, this is what these companies do. They put out misinformation. They do this kind of, you know, not good faith bargaining because they want people desperate and hungry. And look, this strike's been going on a long time. These folks are struggling. And these people know it. So, of course, now is going to be the nitty-gritty. Now is the down and dirty. And you can't stop now. They have to continue to fight through this because the threat here is, you know, if they give in on the AI part, their jobs are gone. It's over. And, you know, I saw this thing today from Penn State's research group here in Pennsylvania that had the top 10 jobs in Pennsylvania that have a risk of being replaced by AI. And, you know, like billing and postal clerks, 100% chance of you losing your job if you're in those industries. If you're an office clerk, if you're a laborer or freight worker, if you stock shelves or move materials, 100% chance of being replaced. Bookkeeping, accounting, auditing clerks, 100% chance of being replaced. People who pack, packers and packagers, 100% chance of being replaced. Postal service mail carriers, 100% chance of being replaced. Fast food workers, fast food cooks, drivers and sales workers. You're looking at in the high 90s. Secretaries, administrative assistants, 94%. You're looking at high 90s of jobs being eliminated. Who's fighting for those jobs? And this is why I come back to this, the Screen Actors thing, why I come back to the Writers Guild. They're the front lines. They're the first battle in the war with AI. They're the first group saying, no, you're not going to take our jobs. No, you're not going to use our images. No, you're not going to, you're not going to steal from us. But what about all these other jobs? These are real people's livelihoods. And I know, well, go get retrained. There's no such thing as AI adjustment assistance. I mean, we don't have trade adjustment assistance anymore. The Republicans didn't re-up that. So if we lose jobs to trade, bad trade policy, you're out of luck. But we've got nothing like that with technology. So as AI comes online, you're just out of luck. There's no one to help. There's nothing here. And again, we've got a dysfunctional government. We've got a House where nothing is getting done. And guess who's happy about that? The very well-to-do. You know who keeps writing Republicans checks? The rich people. Because they love dysfunctional government. They love broken government. Corporate America loves broken government. You know why? Because the only person who can restrain, the only entity that can restrain corporate excess, the only entity that can go after the billionaire class and hold them in check is our government. A government of, for, and by we the people, us. And while we've out-procreated the moneyed interest, they've got all the money. So a shutdown, chaos, a broken nature, a broken house works for them. Status quo works for them. They got their hands planted firmly on the steering wheel. 10-2. Or is it 9-3 now? When I was a kid, it was 10-2. Last I checked, the kids told me it was 9-3. Not high noon with your wrist hanging over. But this is what the wealth class is thrilled with. It's broken. Nobody's accountable. It's the Wild West for corporate America. Just the way they want it. And every day we do nothing. Every day we allow to pass without us trying to get ahead of what is coming, we're falling farther and farther behind. So all the jobs that are going to be lost, and understand, I think it was 5 or 6 years ago, they said in 20 years, half the jobs we do now will be gone. So think of half of the jobs that are being done right now just being gone in the next 15 years. I expect the job that I do, working in the freight industry, at some point before I retire, to be automated. And before I die, to be gone. Because the technology's already there. What are all of those people going to do? What are all the working people who rely on these jobs going to do? And when you've got, and as Morris pointed out, what you've got is you've got, people like Trump going, well, you shouldn't ask for too much because you might encourage them to go faster. Look, they're steaming toward mechanization, AI, robotics, however you want to put it. They're steaming towards that as fast as they can. You asking for a little bit more is not gonna make that go any faster. The second they can replace working people, the second they can get a machine to churn out 24/7, 365 with no health care, no pension, no workers' comp, no unemployment, no any, they're going. And you have to ask yourself, what does that mean for our entire system of not just government, but our retirement system, our healthcare systems, our Social Security, our Medicare, our societal systems, the tax base for local and state and federal? What does that mean? Because we're certainly not taxing the rich in corporate America who are going to be the ones who are going to be reaping all the benefits. No, not doing that. And I know, you know, if we do, but Rick, if we tax the rich, they'll leave. Let them. Just not taking the money with them. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Are you in an industry where you're concerned about robotics, AI, the end of your career? I want to hear about it. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, an interesting question. You know, you look at what's going on in the House, the chaos that is the Republican Party at this moment. And you know, the question, why? Does anyone know why? You know, is this just a matter of, you know, the button was there, so you know, we pushed it. You know, it's just, hey, you know, I saw it, you know. Yeah, sure, the oven was hot, but I wanted to see what would happen. So I wanted to see what happened. Here to help maybe walk through on why this is happening, how this, I guess the how is, well, easy. The why, that's a little harder. That's why I've asked Bill Scheer to come talk with us. Bill is the politics editor over at the Washington Monthly. You can check out his stuff over at BillScheer.com. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure.
So why, Bill? Why are we here?
I wish I like to bring you answers, Rick. That is what I feel I'm from this earth to do. I have no answers for you. I think there is no obvious why. No one's articulating a why. I mean, I understood what the substantive complaint was with Kevin McCarthy,
right?
At least from the vantage point of the Matt Gaetzes of the Republican conference. They wanted a shutdown. They wanted deeper spending cuts and also some possible policy riders like the border, for example. And they were unhappy that McCarthy, who had already abandoned what the Renegades wanted back in January, which was a literal balanced budget over a 10-year period, which sort of sounds nice, but it actually involves very draconian cuts. McCarthy, being sane, realized I can't avoid a debt default or keep the government open with that position. So he abandoned it right away, did a deal with Joe Biden in the spring, set spending caps on a bipartisan basis, avoided a debt default. And the people who weren't thrilled with McCarthy in the first place never wanted to accept, didn't want to accept that, and kept pushing him for deeper and deeper cuts. And McCarthy played along for a time, and then when they hit the midnight hour and you had to keep the government open, McCarthy said, I'm not going to shut down the government over this. Kept it open, and that's when the guillotine came down. It's like, that I understood. I understood why. Now, they're not even debating what the spending levels are, or should we keep the government open, or anything else for that matter. It just seems to be chaos for chaos' sake, at some point, it's just going to make Republicans look like they're not capable of being a governing party.
Well, I argue they're not. And what I've been saying is, look, they're telling us they don't want to be in the majority. They want to be the minority bomb throwers. They want to be the ones who are yelling and screaming and pointing. Look how bad they are. They don't have an agenda. They don't have any policy ideas. They just want to be the chaos merchants. And this is what they're telling us. They're telling us they want Democrats to be in charge.
Well, to be a little charitable here, remember, it was only 8 Republicans that wanted to shift McCarthy. Most of them wanted to keep him around. Most of them voted for the bill to keep the government open. Most of them voted for the debt limit deal with Joe Biden. I mean, it was more than eight who opposed those bills, but even the people who opposed the bill said, you know what, I'm still going to keep McCarthy. I don't want total chaos. It was only eight. And now it just seems like it's unleashed. I mean, it's a high school, you know, it's a high school mean girls deal right now, where both camps are mad at each other for the situation they've been put in. And it just seems like it's now a set of overlapping grudges that's making it impossible to get to a consensus choice for speaker.
Yeah. So Scalise is out. Actually, you know, came in, had a couple more votes, and I guess lost votes as the day went on. Never got to the 150 he thought he had. Who's next? I mean, you know, does Jordan, you know, since he, you know, bowed out, does he pop back up? Does McCarthy pop back in?
I mean, there are definitely people out there pushing Jordan and McCarthy. Again, it's hard to play mind reader. You know, all I can do, you know, as a political analyst is try to assess rational, logical incentives for action.
And are there any of those here?
Well, this is such much more a personality fight now than a policy fight or an ideological fight. So it's harder to assess from the outside. I would think it would be difficult to get consensus around Jordan, because Jordan had fewer votes than Scalise in the first place.
Right.
So the people were for Scalise to have to now fold and give it to the guy who came in number two, because enough of the Jordan voters were too petulant to accept who the winner was. I would think that'd be too big a pill to swallow for those who are in the Scalise majority. It's still possible they could be like, this is so insane that we don't have a speaker. I don't want to be in a situation where we can't pass a bill to help Israel, or we can't pass a bill to keep the government open. So maybe I have to swallow that pill and give it to Jordan. But I would think they'd have a lot of reason and cause to say, screw you guys, it's going to be somebody else. You don't get to be terrorists within this body and get your way every single time, even when you lose. So that's my gut feeling. But again, it's really hard to read from the outside.
Yeah, we're in uncharted water here. I mean, the fact that they can't get into a room and figure this out, because this looks bad for them, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it does look bad for them. I do worry that at some point it splatters on Democrats. And this is, and I was a rare voice counseling Democrats to keep McCarthy in the first place, precisely because I was worried about the level of chaos this could unleash. I mean, chaos in general makes, if Republicans are in disarray, it makes Republicans look bad. If Republicans instigate a shutdown, it makes Republicans look bad. The instigating party always takes the heat when they push a shutdown. We've seen that multiple times over the past several decades. However, if you're in government shutdown for months and months, at some point, you'll start to take a bite out of GDP. And if the economy is going south in an election year, you know, Joe Biden can say all day long, well, don't blame me, it's these idiots that couldn't keep the House open. At some point, the voter says, well, you told me, Joe Biden, you're going to make things normal again. So why haven't you figured that out? So that's what I worry about. This gets so bad that it ends up splattering on Joe Biden.
Yeah, but come on. What am I thinking? Of course we don't know how government works. Of course we're going to blame Joe Biden for this, because he's going to blame him for everything else. Why not? Absolutely.
Well, this was always the Democratic fear has long been that Republicans would behave in a nihilistic way, burn it all down, make everything dysfunctional on purpose, just so they could blame it on the Democratic president. That was the fear in the Obama administration. It was the fear when Biden came in now. And what has been refreshing, what had been refreshing over the past few years, is that Mitch McConnell didn't play that in the first few years. He did not do government shutdowns. He helped pass bipartisan bills like the infrastructure bill, the semiconductor bill, the gun safety bill. And here's Kevin McCarthy, who was more tethered to a more unruly caucus. And even he was able to avert a debt default. So that's why my attitude was, hey, this is as good as it's going to get, Democrats, considering the lot of Republicans you have to deal with. So don't play with fire. But here we are playing with fire.
No, I mean, this is crazy because here we're, 30 days away from potentially another shutdown. You've got the president going to be asking for funding for Israel and Ukraine. And I don't know who you're going to ask for it because there's nobody functional in the House to emanate, the bill. We got real problems.
Yeah, and I think it was in the Democratic interest to show they could keep that they could end chaos, and they could bring back a veneer of stability and functionality. I mean, we keep talking about how dysfunctional things was. As far as I'm concerned, over the past 2.5 years, these are pretty gosh darn functional, considering what's going on in the rest of society. And I hope we can get back there. I hope that whoever becomes speaker will have enough sense to recognize that you have to keep a government open. You have to deal with international crises. I think McConnell and McCarthy made the calculation. Sure, maybe we can burn all down and Joe Biden can go up in flames, but it's still a massive risk to us if we're doing this on purpose, that we can't, over the long haul, be seen as a responsible party to trust with the keys. So whether it's Jordan or whoever pops up right now, I mean, Jordan was trying to make outreach to the Republican moderates, as moderate, using that term loosely, trying to indicate they wouldn't burn everything down. If you're going to be speaker, you're applying for a job that requires adult supervision. That your job is to be the adult. If you don't want that job, don't run for the position. You know, people like Matt Gaetz literally says, I don't want to be speaker. I want to make it impossible for other people to be speaker, but I want to be speaker myself. He's not an adult.
Yeah.
He is a petulant child. Don't let the petulant child run the show. Someone's got to be the grown-up here.
Is there anyone who's palatable to Democrats then? I mean,
Democrats would take anybody. Democrats might have been harboring this notion that they could pull off a bipartisan speaker triple axel. And hey, maybe the gamble will pay off. I don't want to say it's like totally impossible, but maybe the Matt Gaetzes of the world will be so. I mean, and even Gaetz is even the biggest problem right now. Gaetz said he would have voted for Scalise. It's Lauren Boebert and the Bob Goods who made this impossible. Nancy Mace, who makes no rhyme or reason to me. But Democrats have been saying we'll work with Republicans on a speaker, but they have to pledge that they will put certain bills on the floor, that they give us more people on committees. I mean, these are the things that have been sort of floated in the press. And if you're asking for like that much, it becomes politically toxic for a Republican to cross that line. I mean, even a Don Bacon, there's a good number of Biden district Republicans like Don Bacon, who reps Omaha, Nebraska. It's a blue dot in Nebraska. Or Mike Lawler, who is in upstate New York. That's a Biden plus 10 district. They make noise about being bipartisan at times, but they still have to win Republican primaries. So to go outright in open, embrace of a Democratic plan to run the House, that's going to be a bridge too far. That's why my attitude was, if they can keep the government open, that's as good as you're going to get, Democrats, right now. They're not going to pass the immigration bill you want right now. That's not what this group is going to do. But they can keep the government open, maybe. And if there's that kind of agreement, that bare minimum, maybe you can do a bipartisan deal. But beyond that, I think it's asking too much.
Well, maybe that's coming. And maybe you let this play out for a couple more days. Because, look, I got to tell you, if I'm the Democrats, I'm sitting back and I'm letting them show who they are.
I mean, we are where we are now. I mean, at this point, that's the best Democrats can hope for, is that the chaos will become so insane that Republicans take all of the heat for it. But it certainly is helpful for Hakeem Jeffries to be offering escape hatches. Like, hey, America, hey, House Republicans, I would like to make this normal again. Here's my plan to do so. I just don't think you should put too high, make the price tag too big on it.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see where this goes. I'm hopeful that we have functional government again because we need it. But I'm not optimistic.
I'm less optimistic today than I was a couple weeks ago.
Scary, scary stuff. But Bill, I appreciate your thoughts as always. Good stuff, man.
Great to talk to you. Take care.
Our good friend Bill Scheer. Make sure you check out the work that he does over at the Washington Monthly, where he's the politics editor. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at his work. Also, check out BillScheer.com. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. Bury me with my boys in Mount Olive, and let no traitor draw breath over my grave. Such was the last wish of labor leader Mother Jones. She wanted her final resting place to be alongside the coal miners who gave their lives in the struggle to bring fair wages and a safe working environment to Verdun, Illinois. And on this day in labor history, the year was 1898. Members of the newly formed United Mine Workers of America were out on strike against the Chicago Verdun Coal Company mine. They demanded the company pay the new mining wage scale of 40 cents per ton of coal mined. The company refused. Worried that management would try to sneak in replacement workers, the striking men patrolled the railroad tracks leading to the mine. Both black and white strikers joined the lookout party. Just a little after noon on that fateful day, the men spotted a train coming toward them. It was loaded with strikebreakers, African-American workers recruited from Alabama. Looking to escape the oppression of the South, the black workers had not been told about the labor unrest in Verdun. Many refused to work for the company once they learned the truth. The train was also packed with armed guards hired by the company. Determined not to let the replacement workers through, armed strikers met the train at the depot. A gun battle ensued. 8 miners were killed. 4 armed guards also died. A month later, the union won its wage demands. 3 of the union miners who lost their lives that day were laid to rest at the Mount Olive Union Miners Cemetery. It was these men who Mother Jones loved as her boys.
The new dirt falling on a new made coffin. New dirt falling on a new made coffin. I'm way over in that union.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So I came across this story about Mary Lou Retton. Evidently, Mary Lou's not doing well. She has some kind of pneumonia, evidently in a coma. And evidently, the way this story has been reported, her daughter has raised something like $300,000 in crowdfunding to pay her medical expenses. Evidently, according to the crowdfunding, Mary Lou is fighting for her life in the battle with pneumonia. A business person gave her $50,000. But the other $250,000 came from, just average everyday working staffs. And I got to tell you, this is someone who lives in a massive mansion, is worth a couple million dollars, has means. This is not a poor person by any stretch. This is not somebody who fell on hard times. This is not someone who is destitute. This is not someone who, I didn't have health insurance. No, this is someone who chose not to have health insurance, made a conscious decision not to insure herself. This is what I'm getting. Now, evidently, according to reports, has some kind of pre-existing condition. But guess what? The Affordable Care Act did away with that. Now, remember, this is someone who lobbied and did a whole bunch of media around how bad the ACA was. This is somebody who was anti-ACA. And now she's got a serious healthcare condition, evidently not able to breathe on her own, and doesn't have health insurance. And guess what? Shock of all shockers, healthcare is expensive. Now, the report says nobody knows why she doesn't have health insurance, but what we do know is she did campaign against the ACA. She was opposed to the COVID vaccine. So the fact that she's got pneumonia, could it be COVID related? Who knows? But again, this is another one of these moments where I'm quite angered by the fact that someone made a choice and now you're going to the goodness of hardworking people to bail them out. And I know, Rick, you're being mean. Rick, you're being unforgiving. Okay, fine. This is one of those things that I can't help but think of the people who donated to this crowdsource. You know, good, decent, honest, hardworking people, salt of the earth people, who, you know, who knows, may have given their last $5 for all I know. Because our national treasure is in a moment of need. People from her hometown of Fairmont, West Virginia, which is a poor coal mining town, full of struggling people who I lived there for a year. I met these folks. In fact, played baseball with her brother. I think about them and the fact that, they probably don't have health insurance. They can't afford to get sick. And yet they're sending money to someone who could. Someone who could have insured themselves. Someone who could have had the personal responsibility to care for themselves, but didn't. I got to tell you, there's a lot of thoughts here. A lot of thoughts. One, no one should have to fundraise because they got sick. No one should go broke or bankrupt because they got sick. No one should go without health insurance. And I was a firm believer in the ACA's mandate. And you know what? Here's the really weird part. That mandate, that personal responsibility mandate, that was put in because of Republicans. Because if you remember, Republicans used to be, the party of personal responsibility. They used to believe that you should be responsible for yourself. In fact, the mandate was kind of their idea that everybody had to be in. Couldn't have free riders. Couldn't have people gaming the system. That is until a Democrat proposed it and put it into law. Then it became, look at what they did to you. And this is this weird world that we're in, where one side does something reflexively, the other side has to be against it. Because we have to choose our teams, we got to find our sides, got to get on our sidewalk so that we can throw things at each other. That, I got to tell you, is just plain insane. But it's where we are. It's a world that sadly we live in. And here we are in this moment where, guess what? This woman is probably dying. I would not be surprised if it's COVID related. Wouldn't be surprised at all. Let's finish up with a little bit more crazy. This Candace Keller, former Ohio legislator. Evidently, she is tickled pink, thrilled that there is a war in Israel. put on Facebook that you can't make this up. Quote, "I'm pretty excited. We're all going home." Yeah, this is the evangelical point of view. There's a war in Israel. Oh boy, rapture. The rapture's coming, the end times. Yeah, this is her. She's also the one who was complaining that, you know, liberals, whenever there's a mass shooting and, you know, kids get killed in schools, you know, they don't ever talk about fatherless homes. No, they don't talk about those transgenders. No, they don't talk about homosexual marriage. No, they just talk about guns. Yeah, because guns, I know guns don't kill people. People kill people. But the gun helps. And sadly, with the guns that we have today that we didn't have 30, 40, 50 years ago, helps a lot more. So when crazy people start posting crazy things like this, "I'm excited, we're all going home," I tell her, you know, why do we have to have a war? Can't you just leave now? We could do without you. We could get by without you. Promise. Wow, the kookery. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast. You'll find ours. Appreciate you tuning in. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.